You know the Fitzgerald connection, Gatsby?" She nodded. "I hope they don't lose their Gatsby shirts. They're in pretty deep, I read."
"Pretty big crowd. Maybe they'll be okay." As we got closer to the center, we had to speak up over the susurrus of conversation and shuffle of thousands of feet. Always a baby crying somewhere, and bursts of childish laughter and taunting. For some reason, that gave me a dark feeling of loss. I tried to remember why, but nothing came. My children were fine, though I never saw them nowadays. They lived quite a ways away. We got into a short line for the Trilon, following a sign to the Democracy. We'd finished our Cokes. I took Elle's cup, and she held my place while I jogged over to a wastebasket and dropped them in. The basket was otherwise empty, which struck me as odd. Perhaps it filled up fast, and they'd already emptied it. We paid our quarters and went inside to a somewhat disturbing sight. The Trilon featured the longest escalator I'd ever seen. People were quiet going up it, perhaps sharing my sense of foreboding. What would happen if someone fell down at the top? Would the machine stop or just keep feeding people into a growing pile like a conveyor belt in a factory? But then we were out in the sunshine again, people chattering, perhaps in relief. It was a long, airy pedestrian bridge connecting the two monumental buildings. The view was striking. Most of the buildings below us were modern, more curves than straight lines. A spectacular fountain danced at the other end of Constitution Mall, its central column shooting higher than we stood. The inside of the perisphere was one huge globular room. We were escorted onto a moving belt that crawled around its circumference, looking down at a model of the totally planned planetary city of the future, which had a busy, packed central core surrounded by green, quiet suburbs. A voice I knew from newsreels, H.B. Kaltenborn, intoned platitudes about a brave new world of unity and peace. "You think it'll be like that?" I whispered to L. "Sure. It's just what Hitler wants, unity and peace." She turned to me, her face pinched with confusion. "Why am I so certain it's not going to happen? I'm not really a sourpuss."
"I don't think H.B. Kaltenborn is that optimistic either. This is fantasy, though. Science fiction. Model-making on a huge scale. The note on the other side of the map said it took more than 100 people to keep it running. I wondered how many were on treadmills beneath our feet. A job's a job, they say." At the end of the 6-minute circuit, bells tinkled to warn us to step off the conveyor belt or face processing by cheerful Kaltenborn yet another time. We survived a little movie about happy farmers and workers, then were hustled out. We didn't descend by escalator, though. There was a winding ramp that spiraled down around the outside of the globe, cool on the shady side, but hot in the white glare of the sun. Of course, even the ramp had a name, not ramp, but helicline, no doubt describing the hellish sun side. Elle and I shared a fascination with trains, so we went across the bridge of wheels to the railroads building, the largest building in the fair. The inside was a huge O-gauge model train display, half the size of a football field. 500 cars, sharp tang of ozone and oil. Interesting enough, but not something you would care to sit and study unless you were a model train nut. There were a couple of dozen such down in the first row, memorizing every tiny tie. The guide said there were 70,000 of them, nailed down with 250,000 spikelets. I pictured elves. Outside and back, the display was fascinating. Lots of 19th and 18th century train cars and one huge locomotive of the future, streamlined, dark green instead of black. Its main drive wheels stood taller than us, rolling around slowly in place. There were puffs of steam coming out here and there, but I suspected the wheels were being turned by an electrical motor behind the scenes.
It wouldn't be efficient to fire up the burner just to turn the wheels around with no load, and there was a kind of electric motor smell, brushes on copper winding. It looked both futuristic and old-fashioned. L agreed. The future's electricity. Coal and oil are on the way out. It was still a mighty machine, beautiful in its own way. The General Motors building was right across the street, and there was only a short line, taking up maybe a tenth of the serpentine ramp. It was a don't-miss, people said, and even though its Futurama sounded similar to Democracy, we got in the line. Comparison shopping for the future. While we were waiting in line, fanning ourselves with programs and maps, we talked about music for a while. Then abruptly she said, "We're going to be in this damn war, aren't we? Pardon my French." Not over Poland or Czechoslovakia. If Hitler goes after England, maybe. Probably. But I don't know about drafting men for it, though. The last one was so horrible. "You were in it?" I nodded. "Gallipoli." "Oh, my." A moment of silence stretched. "You don't like to talk about it?" "Not really. And I'm not sure I can trust my memories either. It was an ongoing, non-stop nightmare. Surreal. I can't imagine how I survived. Or how anybody did on either side." Sudden memory of shoals of corpses rotting in the sun. She put her hand on my arm. "I've heard that before. Let's just hope it doesn't happen again." "I wouldn't put any money on it." We got to the entrance. Good timing. It was a sit-down ride in cool, refrigerated air, sitting and coolness both welcome. They put us together in a large chair and fastened down a bar across our laps, and we rolled out over a kind of idealized United States of 1960. Speakers built into the side wings of the chair described everything as we passed over it. The baritone voice was conversational and clear. Futurama was, appropriately, more futuristic than Democracy had been. We sailed across the country from east coast to west, looking down over grand highways where teardrop-shaped cars sped from city to city on 14-lane highways at 100 miles per hour. There was a lot of farmland, electrified farms, and forest. People were concentrated in well-ordered cities. Work and school and such were right where you lived. Pedestrians crossed over the fast highways in transparent tube walkways. "No churches," L pointed out. "I heard they're getting into some trouble about that." Good riddance, I thought, but kept the thought to myself. The airports were ingenious, round landing fields around elevators, where the airplanes would be stored underground out of the weather. The air also supported autogyros and dirigibles. I wondered how crowded the sky could become before it would be dangerous, all those different sizes and shapes of machines going all different speeds in whatever direction. The cars that sped below them were automatically controlled. They might come up with a way to do that in the three dimensions of the air as well. The ending of the exhibit was very clever. The last thing we saw was a futuristic intersection. The young man who lifted the bar, releasing us, gave us each a blue button proclaiming, "I have seen the future," and escorted us to double doors, which opened onto a full-scale model of the miniaturized intersection we'd just seen. I had the sensation of suddenly being tiny, scrutinized by invisible giants. L staggered and looked up, I think with the same sense of disorientation. We looked at the map, and L suggested we wander toward the amusement zone for lunch, maybe stop at a pavilion or two on the way. Fine with me. Westinghouse wasn't too crowded. In between its two buildings was the immortal wall and its time capsule, supposedly not to be opened until 6939. I wonder what people that far in the future will make of Gone with the Wind, comic strips and newsreels of FDR talking, and Japanese bombers attacking Canton. A fashion show. They'll probably be like Wells's Morlocks and not be able to get the damn thing open. We stepped into the hall of electrical power just in time for the artificial lightning bolt, which made a blast of thunder so loud I nearly jumped out of my skin. I wasn't looking directly at it, but the reflection of its light was dazzling. It smelled like lightning, too. Hot ozone. They had a strange robot, Electro, with a robot dog, Sparko, which I suppose was intended to humanize the machine. Seemed to work for most people. The thing was about 8 feet tall, bronze, proportioned like an overweight longshoreman. Its head was vaguely negroid, the implications of which I think would be offensive to me if I were a negro. It supposedly responded to spoken commands, though that wouldn't be difficult to fake. It could count on its fingers and dance with a woman and smoke a cigarette, which I'm sure relaxed it after its taxing duties. There was something deeply disturbing about it, sinister, an irrational feeling, I suppose. But a human being at the distant beginning of evolution would have been even less impressive in its abilities. Could novelties like this evolve into being our masters? Is there any way we could prevent it? Just junk them all now, I suppose. I mentioned the idea to L, who said I should stop reading pulp magazines. They'd give me nightmares. For a dime, we hired a runner to take us to the amusement zone in an open carriage like a Chinese jinrikisha. Interesting contrast to go directly from a machine acting like a man to a man functioning as a car's engine. But a job is a job, as people keep saying. The amusement zone wasn't much different from the offerings of a regular carnival, which was comforting and canny on the part of the fair's designers to give us respite from novelty. We partook of hamburgers and french fries and the ubiquitous Coke. I'm a tea drinker normally, but there aren't any tea kiosks. It was good to sit for a while. We talked about music and my art hobby. No politics. Politics was what the fair was all about, of course, and economics, as if you could separate the two. A slightly premature celebration if it was about the Depression being over. Maybe as much wishful thinking and prayer as celebration. Could we even approach the worlds of Futurama or Democracy by 1960? It didn't seem feasible as an engineering project, since you'd have to tear down almost everything and build anew. People wouldn't stand by and applaud while you did it, either. We desire the new, but are reluctant to give up the old. L urged me to try my prowess at the shooting gallery. Fish in a barrel couldn't have been easier. I'd been trained as a sniper before going to Gallipoli, so once I'd analyzed the 22's shortcomings, hold the aim 2 inches high and 1 inch to the left, it was easy to pick off the smallest targets. I made enough points to win a large, yellow, stuffed Electro, which L accepted with glee. Here in the amusement zone, there was no great effort to pretend that the exhibits were intended to uplift or educate. It was all for fun, sometimes on a grand scale, rarely tasteful or modest. We walked through Frank Buck's Bring 'em Back Alive Zoo, which supposedly had more than 30,000 animals, presumably most of them very small. A huge display of monkeys bounding around on an artificial mountain, elephants and giraffes, and big cats looking no more or less unhappy than they do in a permanent zoo. Admiral Byrd's Penguin Island was more interesting, a reconstruction of Little America in Antarctica, full of penguins who would probably have liked it colder, but managed to waddle around endearingly, awkward on land, and graceful in the water. There was a fairly convincing reconstruction of a New York City street in the gay 90s, and a less convincing one of a Shakespearean village, actors with grating, phony English accents. We sat for a while in Heineken's little bit of Holland, having a cold beer in the shade of a windmill. We decided against the parachute jump, though it would have been interesting to see the fairgrounds from that high prospect. The parachutes were tethered, of course, but L thought they descended a little too rapidly, and I was secretly relieved. What if I'd gotten all the way up there and chickened out, as kids say?
There was a group of dwarves living in a miniature village, Little Miracle Town, and next to that display, an 8-foot-tall giant whose